Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm Gabriela Santos, Chief Market Strategist for the Americas here at JP Morgan Asset Management. It's wonderful to be back as the host of Insights Now after being away on maternity leave over the past few months. During that time, I was very focused on all things my baby boy, so a unique opportunity to step back from the day-to-day of the markets. Having come back, it's fascinating to take stock of what's changed, but also what stayed the same since December of 2025. I'm thrilled to be joined today by David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist, to chat about where things stand today after quite a whirlwind start of the year. Welcome, David.
Glad to be here.
Well, in a way, it's not surprising what's happened this year. Geopolitics still top of mind. That seems to be the norm every single year. But it is surprising to look at my screen and see oil prices are up 70% so far this year because energy flows are so severely impacted through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, has any of that changed your outlook for the U.S. economy itself versus what you were expecting coming into the year?
Yes, it has. It's not the only thing that's changed our forecast, but certainly this Iran conflict, it's pushed up oil prices, it's depressed consumer confidence. I think it's increased business uncertainty. And so we think that economic growth will be a little slower in the first quarter. We're going to get those numbers very shortly here, but possibly so also in the second quarter, just because of the uncertainty caused by this. But we do think that eventually they're going to have to find some sort of equilibrium. Eventually, the one part of the solution is Iran's oil gets out of the Strait of Hormuz and everybody else's oil gets out of the Strait of Hormuz. I think that is inevitable. So we still think it's a short-term disruption, but it has slowed growth down. It also, in terms of inflation, it's added a little bit to our inflation boost. So we thought inflation was going to get up to 3-3.5%. Now I think inflation could top 4%. Or get close to 4% by the middle of the year. But we still think it's going to come down as we go through the end of the year. I had hoped before this conflict that we'd get down to 2% by the end of this year. That's beginning to look less likely. But I think that by early next year, we'll be down to 2% year over year because of diminished tariffs, because of diminished shelter costs. And really, that gets to another point here, which is that it's not just oil has changed so far this year. We've seen new numbers on employment, which shows we've got a labor market that's even weaker, but also still very tight because of just huge drops in immigration. So the unemployment rate, I think, is still going to end the year at about 4%, but with very little job growth, maybe 50,000 jobs per month added during the year. And then for economic growth, I think it's going to look like sort of the back of a turtle a little bit. The other thing that we were thinking about a lot going into this year is we're going to have these big income tax refunds. And they've been a little smaller than we thought, to be honest. I think when OBBA was passed, the Joint Committee of Taxation made some calculations on how much these new tax breaks would cost. It looks like that might have been an overestimate. And so the refunds are going to be smaller. But we still think there's probably going to be some further stimulus checks between now and the November election. So that still gives the consumer spending gives a little flip to consumer spending. So overall, a little weaker growth in the near term, but we're still looking at a fairly steady economy, about 2% growth for the year with no recessions, inflation coming down maybe to 2.5% by the end of the year, and the unemployment sticking at about 4%.
Two follow-up questions, David. In terms of the consumer, of course, 70% of the economy and an area where you've done historically so much work over your career, it's pretty shocking to see consumer sentiment basically at all-time lows. Do you think consumption really is going to be that weak, or are there some important offsets there, maybe from the tax refunds?
No, I think it's just not representative. First of all, I don't think it's quite representative of the economy that matters to investors.
Right.
And I think that's really important. I mean, for the economy that matters to everybody else, it's bread and butter in terms of, you know, what's my income, how safe do I think my job is. What's the rate of inflation? These are the things that average Americans worry about. But for the market, it's about profits and interest rates. And if you've got strong profit growth, low interest rates, then it's okay. Now, for consumer sentiment, it is very low. We hit an all-time record low during the month of April. But I think that's partly because of just a trend we've seen for a number of years here, where social media is just making people more and more angry and more depressed. I think that is having an effect on consumer sentiment. And then also, we've had this K-shaped economy. The K is getting bigger. It's a capital K, not just a little K at this stage. And the thing about consumer sentiment is everybody gets one vote. It's the most egalitarian of economic indicators. So I think what it's really telling you is that the average American household really isn't doing very well, and they know they're not doing very well in this economy.
It's amazing to see the top 20% contributing, what is it, 40% to overall consumption?
Yes, and we're seeing, and of course, the top 20% and top 10% are doing very well because we've had three banner years for equity markets. So that's pushed up wealth. They're not that affected by increases in energy prices because it's a smaller part of their overall budget. Mm-hmm. So overall, the people at the top are doing pretty well and they're still spending.
Yeah. You mentioned the second follow-up question, you mentioned inflation.
Yeah.
Now, coming into the year, we had the view that maybe there'd be scope for maybe one, maybe two additional Fed rate cuts to get rates even closer to neutral, or what one could imagine is neutral. Now, it's interesting to see that the pricing has not gone back to pricing in rate cuts. It's basically investors expecting a Fed on pause for this year. Have you changed your views?
A little bit. I mean, the extra oil prices certainly have mean that by the middle of the year, inflation is close to 4%. And if the Fed's target is 2%, they're not even close. Meanwhile, this tight labor market because of changes in immigration policy means they're actually at their long-term unemployment target. So it's very, very hard to argue that the Fed should be easier here. I think another really important point in this story here is Fed independence. And of course, there's been a lot going on in that. And just as we're recording this, the Justice Department has dropped its inquiry into Chairman Powell. And that has cleared the way for Kevin Warsh to become the new Fed chair. But he will have to be chairman, not chief. He doesn't get to make policy. He's got to convince everybody else on the board of the correct policy. And I think, whether it's by his measures or by their measures, there really isn't a justification for a near-term rate cut. Now, by the end of the year, if you've got some resolution in Iran, if you've got inflation getting pulled down by lower shelter inflation, maybe lower tariffs, I think that lower tariffs is also a big part of this, then maybe we get one rate cut at the end of the year. We might get some rate cuts next year if both growth and inflation fall below 2%. But for the moment, short-term outlook, the Fed is not very likely to do anything for most of 2026.
And that's okay as long as there are no rate hikes coming back to the
table. Absolutely. I mean, I tend to be very much of a pacifist when it comes to the Federal Reserve. I really don't think they should be trying to micromanage the economy. Nothing particularly wrong with the level of short-term rates or long-term rates right now. All the issues the economy faces really are on the supply side, which are really determined by policies on the other side of Washington. Mm-hmm. So the Federal Reserve shouldn't try to, be too accommodative of what fiscal policy isn't doing. It's really up to the other side of Washington to fix its story.
Yeah. And certainly when you look at large companies, they're doing just fine with interest rates where they are. It's been truly amazing to look at what's been happening with profits.
So let me ask you a question or two here. And now that you're back after being gone for a few months, we saw a correction in March. It was a 9% correction. And now the market is back at all-time highs. I mean, it's really ironic. We're at this the worst of times in terms of consumer sentiment, but the best of times in terms of the stock market. So do you think the earnings justify this rally?
It's been incredible to see. Normally, you come into a year with certain expectation for profit growth, and normally you figure out that analysts were a little bit too enthusiastic during the holidays, and those earnings get revised down over time. Absolutely not the case. We've actually seen earnings get revised up by 4 percentage points just since the end of December. And now the expectation is for profits to grow about 18% this year. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely incredible. We're here in the throes of the first quarter earnings season. We seem to be on track for about 13% year-over-year earnings growth, but that's probably going to end up higher because we're seeing above average number of companies beating by an above average amount. Now, if we look beneath the surface, it's not about the economy. There's nothing cyclical there that's really that exciting. Consumer discretionary and staples profits are flat. There's nothing that exciting. It's really about two things. It's AI and it's deregulation. When it comes to AI, you can see that clearly in the tech sector, expected to grow earnings 45%. But you can see it in other sectors as well. Basically, all the beneficiaries of all of that spending by the hyperscaler, especially if you're a semiconductor company or an electrical equipment company, you're doing amazing in terms of your actual bottom line. The second piece is really to see financials growing earnings about 20%. The economy's fine. That's important. But it's really about animal spirits coming back, activity, M&A, potential big IPOs coming up. and the ability of banks to lend again to corporations as a result of some looser regulations. So makes sense to me to have equity markets back to all-time highs, not because you have an amazingly strong economy, but because of profits and because of really structural rather than cyclical themes.
And okay, and another question. Last year, finally, we got a really great year for international investing. I mean, even if you ignore the fact that the dollar fell over the course of the year, even in local currency terms, international equities beat U.S. equities. Is that one and done, or you think this this trend's got some legs here?
It's been really good to see that this is another year that internationals are outperforming, even though it's been another year where there's been a lot of geopolitical and policy uncertainty. So last year, we ended up with international outperforming the U.S. by 1,500 basis points, even though the U.S. had an amazing year. It was just better overseas. That was the biggest outperformance since 2009. And that was really driven by weaker dollar and multiple expansion. This year, we're seeing outperformance by about 500 basis points, and it's being driven by the profit side. You've also seen earnings get revised up in other regions. Now, it's been great to see the region that's leading this year versus last year is emerging markets. That has a lot to do with the AI story. So you're really seeing tremendous profit growth in areas like Korea, Taiwan, parts of China. That has everything to do with semiconductors and memory and really just this huge boom that's happening around artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And it's an asset class that can survive, shall we say, a lot more than it used to, just has less vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. So it's been great to see another year for international so far, despite challenges. And this time, really AI going global and EM coming up on top.
Interesting. Yeah, I certainly sort of see that also. And I find that individual investors are more willing to talk about adding some international.
Yeah. And do you think that's a move a lot of investors have already made, David, kind of readjusting portfolios after a very concentrated performance in U.S. equities, or still kind of offsides?
Not really. I think investors are still very offsides. We've seen, for example, if you look at the top 10 stocks, we have a chart in our guide which looks at the extraordinary market concentration of the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500. And it's down from, say, 38% at the start of last year to about, say, 36%. But that's still enormous. 10 companies, 36% of the market. So it's still much higher than it has been historically. So that's the first thing. I think the market itself is over-concentrated in those hyperscaler and those the mega-cap tech stocks. Second thing is that investors are, to some extent, overweight equities relative to fixed income and cash. We have another chart in the guide where we show, look, if you didn't rebalance, and a lot of people don't rebalance, then you're just going to get more and more and more overweight equities. And so, you know, so what was a 60-40 portfolio is suddenly, you know, a 72-38 portfolio. Yeah. So I think people have taken on board more risk from that perspective. And then also, you know, yes, we had a good year for international, but that's just scratching the surface of people's allocations. Most people are very under-allocated to the U.S. The U.S. is 62% of global stock market cap, which is an extraordinarily high number.
Yeah.
But most investors are far higher in terms of their allocation to U.S. equities relative to international equities. So I think investors are still offside, and I think they do need to rebalance. I mean, when I look at the economy, I feel pretty good about it. When you look at the profit picture, you feel pretty good about it. But we've got to recognize that this economy is vulnerable to a shock. You know, the things that have really hurt us in the 21st century aren't things within the economy. It's these, you know, fat-tailed events. And I think with the explosion of the capabilities of biotech and military technology and information technology and artificial intelligence, all these things make us a little bit more vulnerable to a shock. So I think people still need to get more balanced over time, even though the outlook looks relatively good.
Yeah, so diversify for things that could go wrong. But also, even if things go right, it's already a lot of it's already expected. It's priced in and themes evolve, right?
That's well, absolutely. And particularly when it comes to international, it's not just a defensive play. There's plenty of offense there.
Oh, yeah. And even the AI theme this year has already changed. It's not about the hyperscalers. They're actually lagging the index. It's about the new implementation and the adoption. Well, David, one bonus question for you. Because no matter the year, one thing that has stayed the same is your love of running.
Yes.
And you've just recently run your 8th Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Really, really amazing. And I know that you run without listening to music or anything.
That's right.
My question for you is, does it get harder or does it get easier?
I think that it does both. And it's kind of like in life. I mean, you know, so you recognize more of your physical limitations. And so it takes you a little longer to recover. And, you know, you can't go quite as fast. But on the other hand, you gain wisdom. And so, you know, on Monday when we were running the Boston Marathon, I was running with a friend of mine who's also in his early 60s. And neither of us are spring chickens when it comes to this marathon. And so we knew it was a beautiful day, tailwind. Everybody was, you know, speeding off at the start. I was just sort of hanging back. We knew exactly sort of what sort of measured pace we needed to make. So we had something left in the tank at the end. And, you know, that's one of the advantages of life. You don't get smarter, but you do get wiser. And wisdom is just the accumulation of knowledge from being there. And we've been there before, and I've been there many times now, the Boston Marathon. I run it for the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, which is a wonderful charity. And I'm really happy to run with that team every year, and I hope to keep doing it. And, you know, hopefully I can continue to add with wisdom what I'm definitely going to lose because of the years.
I've also heard that being... parents is a bit of a similar situation. It gets easier, but it also gets harder. But hopefully you do add some wisdom.
Well, there was a great ad for a different financial company years ago, which said, you know, the thing about every stage in life is by the time you get to the end of it, you're an expert. But wouldn't it be nice to get wise enough early enough to do yourself some good?
Yep.
And that's really the problem with motherhood and fatherhood, too. By the time you figure it out, you're on to something else.
Well, hopefully we've helped a little bit, at least when it comes to markets. Thank you so much, David, for joining.
Anytime, Gabby.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us for another episode of JP Morgan Asset Management Insights Now. We hope you join us next time.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.